Hi, listeners. I'm your host, Rebecca Kelly, and welcome back to The Station, a fiction podcast about a girl named Ida Shepherd who's trapped on board a dying space station called the Delta. This podcast is me reading my novel, The Station, and if you're interested in checking out the book, I definitely suggest it. It's available on Amazon, and I will link that in the show notes if you'd like to check it out. Also, you can take a look at my website, RebeccaJKelly.com, where I have a monthly newsletter giving you updates and actually some bonus content for those who sign up. So definitely take a look at that. It will also be linked in the show notes below. Now, let's get on with the show. In the last episode, we left Ida shortly after her mother's death. Now, New Shepherd died from breast cancer after living almost two decades trapped on board the Delta. And it was tough on Ida, but you know, she's a survivor. And in this episode, we're going to jump back to the present where Ale Bacchus, the NASA engineer who found Ida's distress signal, continues to work on rescuing her. And their task is to repair the damaged Soyuz that currently sits at the station so Ida can take it down as a lifeboat. And they're on a time crunch because the Delta is going to fall out of orbit very soon. So here is chapter 35 of The Station. Yuri Medvedev was a grizzled old soul. You'd know this simply by looking at his face, which bore the deep, tanned skin and sun-wrinkled look of a man who'd seen a battle or two in his younger days. His hair, bleached white with age, was cropped short and stood straight up from the top of his head. He sat with his chair cocked against the back wall of the conference room, teetering on the back two legs, shoulders resting on the wall. His feet, wrapped in worn leather moccasins, were propped up on a small desk next to the conference table. Spread out in front of him were an assembly of documents, maps, schematics, and file folders. Sitting open were two old-style laptops, teetering precariously on top of a pile of paperwork in front of him. He held a stained ceramic coffee mug in his left hand. A third old laptop sat on his lap over his worn cotton dockers. His pale pink button-up shirt had a matching coffee stain on the left breast pocket. Yuri took a sip of the extra-strength coffee in his mug and replaced it in his lap before checking a small phone that he pulled out of his right pocket. To say that Yuri was Russian would be an understatement. If ever there was a poster child for a rough Russian upbringing, he was it. He was born and raised on a pig farm near St. Petersburg and had three PhDs to his name. 20 years before, he'd been a young member of the Corps of Astronauts at Roscosmos. His tenure there was, of course, cut short by the start of the war. Doing his duty as a proud Russian citizen, he enlisted in the army to fight on the North Korean front. Ale, impressed by Yuri's casual entrance into the conference room, corralled a desk and chair for him to set up his own space. Yuri was currently working with the Russian government to start their space program again, but it would be a long road. The war hit the Russians particularly hard, and their programs were many years behind those of NASA. One rumor floating around the building was that Yuri was part of an underground Russian mafia. Nobody could prove that, of course, and it was highly unlikely that Roscosmos would hire a true mobster, but Ali can see how the curious eyes at NASA might make such a judgment on the big fellow who sat before him. He looked like someone who fell into the not-to-be-messed-with category. When Jade called in a favor from a friend of hers at the Russian embassy, Yuri was the obvious choice. He flew on the Soyuz twice in his pre-war stint with Roscosmos, once as a flight engineer and once as a commander. He even spent 3 months on the Delta as part of the rotating astronaut crew about a year prior to the outbreak of the war. The Soyuz program dated back to the Soviet Union of the 1960s. It predated the moon landings and the space shuttle and represented a time when you could cut the Cold War tension with a knife. However, the Soyuz technology survived. Born from the mind of one of the greatest rocket scientists of all time, Sergei Korolev, the Soyuz was originally meant to be part of a Soviet moon landing program. Despite the early success of the Soviet spaceflight programs, America beat them to the punch, setting a manned ship down onto the gray powder of the lunar surface on July 20th, 1969. After this defeat, the Soviets turned their attention to other matters, more practical matters of how to keep humans in space long term. In the mid-1960s, the program underwent its first test flights, only to struggle with limited success. The first manned flight of the Soyuz, intended as more of a public relations statement than an actual test of the equipment, failed miserably, claiming the life of the cosmonaut on board and sending the Soviet engineers back to their respective drawing boards. After a complete engineering overhaul and more rigorous testing, the Soyuz flew again. The spacecraft design stood the test of time, outliving the engineers who built it, the spectators who watched its first flight, and even the government that developed it. It became the most reliable vehicle to ever fly the friendly skies of low Earth orbit. Through collaborative efforts, the world space agencies built more advanced space stations, leading up to the most important and expensive collaboration of all, the Delta. All the while, the Soyuz remained the primary people-hauling workhorse, with the Russians selling tickets at astronomical prices to any space agency who wanted an astronaut moved into orbit. Yuri was part of the Roscosmos team that helped build the Delta, so he wasn't surprised when he received a phone call from Jade telling him to get to Baltimore ASAP. Once again, the Americans needed the Russians to deliver them to the surface, and that thought brought a smile to Yuri's lips. Now, as he pored over maps and schematics, Ali watched Yuri, wondering if his knowledge of the Russian spacecraft, no doubt faded after years of war and life, would be enough to bring this Soyuz home safely. Ali could only hope. This was their best option considering the age of the technology. The biggest problem facing them now was the age of the Soyuz parked at the Delta. It wasn't just the fact that it was old. This Soyuz had spent 19 years in a vacuum, the harshest environment known to man. Of course, the Delta itself was still operational after as many years, but that was due to the diligent hard work of its crew members. Although Ida and Nu kept the space station going for many years, they hadn't done anything with the Soyuz. There were no regular power-ups, battery testing, or shield inspections done. It was essentially like a tiny parasite attached to its host, drawing power, yet producing none of its own. Whether or not it could survive away from the Delta remained a mystery. "Yuri," Ali said, taking a seat next to the gruff Russian. "Good morning. Did you have a good night's sleep?" They had spoken briefly when Yuri arrived the night before, but had passed along no pleasantries. Just a quick introduction before Yuri stomped off, his laptop and a stack of debriefing paperwork tucked under his left arm, a haggard yellowed suitcase hanging from his right fingers. Hardly looking up from the old laptop in front of him, Yuri set down the coffee mug and grunted in reply to Ali's question. Ali lifted one eyebrow, unsure how to take that. Did the man sleep? It was obvious Yuri wasn't the talkative type, which was fine with Ali. As long as he knew his stuff, Ali was okay with him. It certainly looked like Yuri knew his stuff. He continued, "You're aware of the situation, I assume. Any questions for me?" "Nyet," Yuri said, the word coming short and sharp out of his lips. Ali waited, and Yuri finished looking over the document on the desk in front of him before he said, "Mr. Bacchus, please call me Ali." Yuri nodded and continued, "Ali, I am aware of the situation. I was given a full briefing the day before yesterday." Surprisingly, Yuri Medvedev spoke exceptional English. He had studied at Oxford and knew the language fluently. There was only a slight hint of a Russian accent in his speech. "Great," Ali said. "Where do we start?" "Unknown at this time," Yuri replied, turning his attention back to the laptop and making notes in a little purple notebook. "I will have a full diagnostic report by the end of the day. I spoke to the girl earlier and relayed the information on starting up the Soyuz so we can start pulling data from the systems on board." Yuri shook his head and smiled at the mention of Ida, saying, "That girl is smart. She is fluent in Russian, you know." Ali nodded in response. He knew that Ida was fluent, but he hadn't actually spoken to her in Russian before. Yuri continued. It will take her several hours to bring all systems online. Until that time, we wait. I asked her to send her robot out to take pictures of the outside of the ship. Who knows what type of damage the outside has sustained? But the fact that the docking system has been open all these years is a good sign. It means the hull of the ship is intact. Good, Ale said. Let me know when you've got more information. I'll be in my office. Later that day, Yuri dropped into the empty chair across from Ale's desk. The Soyuz systems are all operational, he said. The batteries are dead, but that's to be expected after 19 years. She's running on power fed directly through an umbilical from the Delta. You mentioned that the batteries on the station are still functional? Yes, Ale said. The Delta's equipped with solid-state lithium batteries, but when the nuclear power plant is functioning normally, they aren't used. The computer is set to test them periodically and to use 30% of their capacity from time to time to make sure they remain functional. But, like I said, the station doesn't rely on them for power like it would if it were running on solar power. Yuri nodded and looked down at the little purple notebook before continuing. The Soyuz batteries are older technology. It's equipped with 5 lithium-ion batteries here. As he spoke, he pointed to the very bottom of a hologram projection of the Soyuz that stood directly over Ale's desk. These serve both primary and backup battery purposes. Then there are reentry batteries, also lithium-ion, here. Now he waved aside a small panel on the middle portion of the craft to reveal the components underneath. The solar panels are also not functioning. It appears to be a total electrical failure. I'm not sure why. The electrical systems are working within the craft, but the power generation and storage systems are dead. Ale's brow crumpled. That's not an issue as long as we stay docked to the Delta. But once it undocks, no more power. Yuri nodded in agreement. We'll use batteries from the station then, Ale continued. He looked at Yuri and asked, will that work? Yuri nodded. It should work. The batteries on the Delta are solid state, but they can be adapted to fit into the Soyuz. She'll have to do a spacewalk, though. The compartments are not accessible through the interior of the spacecraft. Ale dropped his head and pinched the bridge of his nose. The spacewalk was risky. Ida had never done one before. What about the robot, he asked. Could the Nix unit replace the batteries? Doubtful, Yuri said. It's complicated, especially since the battery types are not the same. From what I know, the robot, it would not be able to. But I could be wrong. Ale thought about this for a second. Nix had greater capabilities than any robot he'd seen before, but he knew this was a stretch. Perhaps we should ask Ida, he said. She knows what he's capable of better than any of us. It's worth a try, Yuri agreed. I'll come up with a plan to move the batteries. I'll need full schematics on the Delta's battery bank to make sure the connections can be updated, but I don't foresee a problem. Yuri flipped the cover of his notebook shut and stood to leave. As he turned, he paused and said, before we begin changing out these batteries, we must be absolutely sure who's doing this spacewalk. If the robot is not capable, it could damage the batteries in the transfer, and with a finite number of station batteries to work with, we need to be clean here. Understood? Understood, Ale replied. Later that week, Ale sat in his apartment in the Baltimore neighborhood of Pigtown. He'd lived in Pigtown his entire life. In fact, his mother still lived there, just a few blocks away from him. The apartment, although small, was perfect for him. He had a good view of Carroll Park, and it was only a few blocks walk to the Orioles Stadium. The drive to Goddard took easily an hour one way, so he spent a lot of time at work. He had briefly considered moving closer to Goddard after he landed the job at NASA, but he'd scrapped the idea. Pigtown was home, and it had always been home. He sat on his couch with a large hollow screen open in front of him. The screen was open to a coding program he was working on for the battery transfer, but he hadn't touched it. He was too wrapped up in his thoughts to notice the coding program. The longer he worked with Ida, the more distracted he found himself. He'd be in the middle of walking or driving or working, and all of a sudden he'd picture her in his mind, floating in front of the space station windows, staring down at the surface. Before he knew it, he'd lose himself in the image, and all ability to concentrate escaped him. It was incredibly annoying. Every day, Ida said or did something that amazed him. Her knowledge of football statistics, or her willingness to share her favorite recipes, or even just the sound of her voice. There was a subtle innocence to her that he'd never noticed in another human being. He left every conversation lighthearted and loopy. He even caught himself smiling like a goofball while he spoke to her. Now, as he sat on his couch with his eyes closed, he was there with her, floating in front of that window. This time, she was looking at him, smiling. Then she reached out her hand, and he could almost feel her fingers graze the skin on his cheek. Blood pulsed through his body as he imagined her touching his skin, and a shiver went down its back. His phone vibrating next to him jerked him back to reality. He grabbed the phone off the table and stared at the time. It was nearly 10 o'clock at night. He realized that he'd been sitting in the same spot, dazed, for over an hour. He shook his head to clear away the cobwebbed feeling from his mind and answered the phone. "Good evening, young one," came Yuri's voice from the other end. Ali chuckled at the nickname. Apparently, the grizzled old Russian had warmed to him. "I've been going over the schematics, and I found another problem." For 2 days, the team had worked on the plan to move the batteries from the Delta to the Soyuz. Ida would need a week of practice and prep work before the spacewalk, so the time frame was tight. Ida confirmed that a task of this magnitude probably wasn't something that Nix could handle himself, but when confronted with the idea of doing the spacewalk on her own, Ida hadn't shown any sign of fear or doubt. She just asked for the plan, and on they went. It would take her almost 4 hours to complete the entire transfer, then another 6 hours of work inside the Soyuz, bringing all systems online and tying everything to the new batteries. The spacesuits were, like everything else on the Delta, outdated, but both, the primary suit and the spare, appeared to be in good working order. The suits were approved for use up to a max of 7 hours because of their age, so the 4-hour spacewalk would be well within their capabilities. "What's the problem?" Ali asked, biting his lower lip. "It appears that the external covering, the heat-protectant materials that covers the Soyuz, is flapping in the breeze," Yuri said. "Right," Ali answered, ignoring the comment about the breeze, since there was no breeze in space. "Yeah, Ida mentioned that. She says it's always been that way. That shouldn't affect the re-entry, though, right? I mean, that fabric is just there as a precaution. The heat shield does most of the work." "Duh," Yuri responded. "But the damaged material will need to be removed to make sure it doesn't get in the way of any sighting instruments or change the entry velocity." "That's not the biggest problem, though," he continued. "With that material out of place, it's left the heat shield and the skin of the vessel open to extreme temperatures and debris strikes. That type of exposure weakens the metal over time. I found 13 holes in the outer hull, just by doing a quick overview of the pictures taken by the robot. And that's what we can see right now. There could be more. The bulk of the heat shield is protected by the service module, so that probably saved it from worse damage. But with at least 13 holes in the outer shell alone, it could be a disaster." Ali groaned and slumped his elbows to his knees. It was true. Having a compromised hull was not a good idea for a re-entering ship. Even if the heat shield was in perfect working order, the heat from the atmospheric reentry could burn right through the remaining layers of shielding and eventually reach the cabin. The occupant would suffocate when the atmosphere rapidly dispensed and would likely get cooked alive. "What can we do about it?" Ali asked. "I'm working on that. I think there may be a way to patch it using the material from the outer hull of the Delta. Of course, it's going to take a much longer spacewalk. In fact, we'll probably need to do 2 of them, maybe 3. "Okay," Ali said, sitting up and rubbing his eyes with his left hand. "Keep working on it. We'll discuss it tomorrow morning when I'm back in the office." "I will do that, young one," Yuri said, ending the phone call. Ali stood, looked out the window over the lights of the city, sighed, and turned towards his bedroom.
Thanks for listening, sci-fi fans. In the next episode, we'll join Ida as she prepares for her first spacewalk to repair the damaged Soyuz spacecraft. You don't want to miss it. See you then. Bye.